Jacksonville's game-winning 80-yard drive last week was a lesson well learned for members of the Browns' defense as they continue preparations for this week's opponent. Here's defensive coordinator Ray Horton with more.
On that last drive in that Jacksonville game.
Yes, very disappointing. I think on everybody's part, especially our defense, to be put in a situation where the offense and Josh had done a outstanding job of getting us a lead with, I think, 3:17 left in the game. And for us not to seal the deal was very disappointing. We had jumped off sides on the play, potential sack fumble that was negated. They hit a pass down the sideline, and then at the very end, Cecil Shorts ran a double route that was completed. And I think everybody was highly, highly disappointed, and probably nobody more so than Joe, who took it very hard. For that, I think shows outstanding character that, you know, it means that much to him. And I believe if you'd asked him before, he'd love to be the guy that they throw at to make the play. And as happens in this league, it didn't happen that particular time. And he's done that, you know, obviously a lot more than he had not for this year. But it was just an unfortunate that he had to happen to catch it on that particular play.
A lot of numbers and stats to talk about your defense. To be a really good defense, a top defense, do you have to stop the other team on that drive?
Yeah, you do. I think if you want to make a statement, you know, people talk about statement games. Players do within the league about, you know, certain games are statement games. You do. You want, you relish, you should say, hey, put it on us. And great players would say not only put it on us, but put it on me. That they throw the ball in that situation or try to get the sack. That's how you make a name, a reputation in this league of big-time players making big-time plays in big-time games. And I would hope most of our guys would want to be in that situation. I know I did. I wanted it to be kind of like we had talked about the halftime of the Kansas City game being maybe an epiphany of how good we can be. And those are kind of drives, if you will, that cement or help build that legacy, that legend, that ability to be mentioned as a good top defense.
With so much less at stake now mathematically, the way the season has gone, how do you get your guys to have another epiphany or whatever to make positive these last four games?
Well, you know, when you say numbers, I don't think this is like a punishment or a Sisyphus type event where all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, what's in front of us? I think our guys are highly motivated all the time to perform well every chance. So that's what we talk about all the time. We talk about one of our sayings is the standard is a standard. The players use it all the time about it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we do. We just care about getting off the field. We can't control how we get on the field. So that will never be an issue, I think, with our group of guys, character-wise, of what's in front of us and what we're playing for and how we want to be representative of the Cleveland Browns.
Ray, how do you feel about the unfortunate loss of Desmond Bryant for the rest of the season, and how can you compensate for him, and what kind of season did he have?
Well, first of all, you know, you want players to be healthy, and we're taking care of that step for him. And I keep going back. I'll use the same things probably as long as I'm here, as long as we have the same type players, that depth is very important in this league. And you can look around the league, and if you lose a top player, i.e. a quarterback, it's hard in this league. If you have quality depth, as some teams have for us, I think we just keep going, and I believe that we won't miss a beat. Is he a good player? Is he one of our better players? Yes, he is. But I also have trust and faith and belief that the guys behind him, who are really just starters and waiting, it's their time now.
Paul Kruger hit 9 sacks last year with the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
He has 2.5 here. What kind of season does he
have? What kind of season has he had? I would believe he would say frustrating, meaning our record, first of all, and he had the majority of his sacks the last quarter of the season plus the postseason, and he kind of helped Baltimore ride that crest, that wave to the Super Bowl. I think if you ask me to put an adjective to it, he'd say frustrating. He's he wants to do more. He's doing everything that he can. Sometimes you can't do it as one man, and sometimes you just do. You ride that momentum of, wow, everything's clicking at the right time. But we're not disappointed. I'm sure he is, and I'm sure he's frustrated that most of our guys don't have better numbers. But that's individually.
You're sure that he is disappointed.
I can't tell you what he is. You asked me what I thought. I'm saying what I think. I don't know. I can't tell you what's in his mind and what's in his body. I can tell you I believe he would probably use frustrated. I don't know. You can ask him, and he would probably honestly say, yeah, we are, I think, disappointed in the way our year's going. You know, it's not, you know, we had a critical game at Cincinnati that could have been a statement game. It wasn't for us, unfortunately, but that doesn't diminish the fact that there's a lot of players playing at a high level.
Desmond Bryant, when he had his first incident in the Buffalo game, was he ever the same after that as a player?
I don't remember specifically what happened in the Buffalo game. Let's put it this way. I don't think there was a drop-off, a noticeable drop-off in anything. I'm sure this is just more of a precautionary deal with him, and because it, you know, we obviously monitor players' conditioning from weight to heart rate to everything, and I'm sure this is just something that came up, and they're doing the right thing medically for him.
What development have you seen in Leland McFadden? Obviously, he was injured in training camp, had a couple of really tough games in the end of the preseason. Mm-hmm. What development have you seen in him?
For me, I use probably the biggest word for me is either trust or accountability. And I believe you're accountable to your teammates, and I have to be able to trust you. He has that now. He has my trust to go into a game. He's prepared hard. He's worked hard on the field, and he's earned his chance to play. And he is one of our starters in waiting, and he'll play for us, and I expect him to do well.
One other question in regards to the same line. You came from a franchise in Pittsburgh that's known for developing players.
Mm-hmm.
Guys come in, guys leave, and mm-hmm. guys are filled in. Do you see them trying to do that here with all these young guys that they brought in at the bottom of the roster?
I think everybody, most organizations, and you mentioned Pittsburgh and the team we're playing this week, New England, I think they try to do the same thing. I think really when you base a winning franchise on something, it's probably a system. And the players come in, you try to get players that match your system, and you try to get good, smart players that are somewhat interchangeable. Because at some point somebody's going to get hurt, or they're going to graduate to another team or to retirement, and that's the lifeblood of your team, is getting good young players to come in and play. Is it hard for certain positions because of what it takes to either play it mentally or physically? It can be, and I believe defensive back is, because if you make a mistake, it's always points or yards. And so for me, it's a very critical position to be trusted and be accountable, and he's earned that now, and that's why he's earned the right to play.
Bryant figured to take Desmond Bryant's playing time?
For us, for our defense, I believe it's probably important to the players to start. For me, it's not who starts, it's just who's in the game. And for me, really, we don't have a starting D-line. We do put the same group out there, but they all play. We try to get them somewhere between 22 and 35 snaps, so they all get about the same. Is it important for them to be out there the first snap? It may be to them. It's not to me. So we will continue to roll all of our guys through.
Will he get 30 snaps?
I would hope he gets 22 to 35 snaps in the game.
What's the key to trying to slow down Tom Brady?
Interesting. My opinion, Tom Brady is the greatest draft pick in the history of the NFL. And, I know a lot of old names, and I wasn't back there drafting in the old days. But when you look at what Tom Brady has done from where he came from, I believe he's the greatest draft pick in the history of football. I might go so far as to say he may be the greatest player that's ever played. And that's not just because we're playing him. That's my belief. the things he's overcome, the way his will, his heart, his probably preparation for the game. I don't know if there's a better NFL player in the history of the game than Tom Brady. To answer your question, how do you do it? It's hard to. You've got to give them different looks. You've got to pressure them. You've got to play at your best, because I'm pretty sure he's going to prepare, and he won't take any game, any opponent lightly. So it's an ultimate test for me, I think, as a coordinator, this one player. I think he's everything you want in a franchise quarterback, and I think his love for the game is outstanding. I think his ability to read defenses, to throw, and probably one of the best things about this guy from afar, I've never been on the same team, is his ability to make his teammates better.
Do you try to disguise pre-snap stuff more against him as opposed to other quarterbacks?
No, I think there's, as you go, most veteran quarterbacks, you try to do that. They will figure it out as soon as the ball is snapped. They'll look at the safety's rotation, and they'll know where to go, when to go. You always try to disguise. I think with younger quarterbacks, you try to maybe confuse and maybe do some things that aren't necessarily schematically sound just to give him a different look. But you can't do that with Tom Brady. You can't be unsound. You can disguise. But at the snap of the ball, he'll know where to go with the ball, and then it becomes a one-on-one matchup. He, along with Jimmy Graham, I believe, changed the position that we now see as tight end. Whether you want to call them hybrid wide receivers or hybrid tight ends, they have the ability to be in tight to block. They have the ability to run up the field. The catch radius is unbelievable. His hands, his speed, his toughness, it's a classic matchup of if you put a linebacker on him, he's probably going to outrun him. If you put a safety on him, he's going to out-physical him. And really, I think he changed the nature of that position. And then you get the old Ozzie Newsoms and the Kellen Winslow. Those are, you know, those guys were kind of freakish guys at that time that would now fit in perfectly in today's NFL.
Greg, a couple more questions?
You've been in the game for a long time. Just the kind of the enduring partnership of Belichick and Brady. You rarely see this kind of longevity for a star and a coach in any sport.
Yeah.
Just your thoughts on
that. The first one that comes back is probably Knoll and Bradshaw. You can go back to Shula and Marino. And I'll tell you an interesting antidote to this. I was watching the Cincinnati game. Cincinnati's New England's defense was on the field. And Coach Belichick was standing about two yards behind the line of scrimmage, as he often does. And Tom Brady was on the sideline, and there was a turnover. So the New England defense got a turnover, and their sideline was going berserk, except for two guys, Tom Brady and Coach Belichick. They both just stood there like, okay, time to go to work. It was like a surgeon. And they were the only two that didn't jump up and down. And I thought, they're tied at the hip together. It was an interesting little deal. And then, you know, you talk about two guys together. You know, I've studied Coach Belichick because, you know, he's probably the greatest modern coach. And I study where he stands on the film. I watch and try to understand why is he stand, where is he stand. And everything from when you watch their practice film, when they show a little, you know, that little clip that you guys get in pregame stretch and stuff, how many times he twirls his whistle? 5 times. Not 6, not 4, 5 times. So you look at little things that people do. Why do they do it? And probably repetitive. And it was amazing on that one play that they both stood there while everybody else was jumping down, where they were probably so hyper-focused that now's the time to attack. But it's an unbelievable relationship that they seem to have, that they both probably understand what the other guy's thinking. They both probably have the same mannerisms.
That was this season?
Mm-hmm.
Go back to something you said earlier where you say you can't control where the other team gets the ball.
Correct.
There were a couple, you know, turnovers in your territory the other day.
Yes.
How do you keep your guys from saying, geez, we're in a bad position with these turnovers, as opposed to we got to go out and make sure we stop?
I believe sometimes words are not words. We do not control how we get on the field. It's usually a kickoff, a punt, or it's a turnover. Those are the three ways that you get on the field, and you can't determine where you get on the field. But we talk about that all the time. That becomes a mindset. And here's a statistic for you that you look at, and you're going to say yes and no, okay? We talk about those stops in the red zone. If we stop somebody just four times, meaning a stop in the NFL is not a 0 point. It's a non-touchdown. Four times we're number 10 in the league, and that's how tightly grouped you are. But the important thing is you've got to make them kick threes. Threes win in this league for you as a defense. If you can make them kick 3 points, it allows you to stay in the game. And 3 points last week were so critical to the game. It changes the dynamics of the game going down the line. And that's what we strive on is not to get in. And when you look at the great stands in a game, usually it's a goal line stand on fourth and one that has a tremendous swing because it's not only a 3 point, it's a 7 point swing.
What is a realistic
number? Because I charted that in this seven game streak mm-hmm. when you guys have lost six of seven.
Mm-hmm.
You've given up 20 touchdowns and 12 field goals.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you'd like to have those two numbers reversed.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it?
League average is 50%. That's the average for the league is 50%. It's field goals. It's touchdown percentage. We're below. There's no question we're below average. We're 28th in the league. That puts you in the bottom third, but we're four away from 12. So that number, is it bad? It's awful for me because I'm used to being one or two the last 2 years. Okay? So is it awful? It's hideous to me. But how far away from average, which we don't want to be, we're four stops from average. We're five away from number nine. The league, and that categories is bunched up, but those are scoring opportunities that you allow your offense to go down and have to get 7 instead of 14 or 4 instead of 7, 3 instead of they're huge swings in the game.
You've been in the top higher percentage on this red zone thing until this year.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have a clue of like how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened?
Early in the season, I would say it was poor play. And right now, I would say that we just haven't made a half a stop a game, and that's all there is. I would assume if we had four more stops, you guys, there wouldn't even be a question. You guys would go to the next area, which was third down, which I believe we fixed. And then if we'd had those two areas fixed, you guys wouldn't be here. You'd be out having lunch right now. So, you know, I understand there's two areas that needs to be fixed. I believe we fixed one of them, the third down, and the red zone is four stops from being average, which we don't want to be. So that's why I always say the glass is half full versus half empty. I don't think it's gloom and doom, and that's why I use the Sisyphus thing. It's not a uphill battle that the rock's going to come back and pound us on the head all the time. I don't see us that way.
Generally, within a touchdown, four swing in 12 games, it's a...
I think, and I go back to Green Bay is the only one that I can think of off the top of my head that it hasn't been a one-score game, and the Green Bay game was either a 17 or a 16-6 in the fourth quarter when we had a turnover that was taken off the board. So that's the NFL. You better prepare yourself to come down in the fourth quarter to a drive that, you know, those swings are... Those are what put you over the top and get you wins. And I've been in many games where they're close and you walk away winning 17-14, 14-13, and you have the same kind of numbers, but you get the win and nothing else matters. Nothing else matters but winning.
You understand why I feel a little gloom and doom when it's Jacksonville that does it to
you? Oh, I think in this business it's so hard to win. It doesn't matter if it's Jacksonville, if it's New England. They're all the same to me. They're 1/16th of the year, so they're all weighted the same to me. And do I understand perceptions of, well, this team is better than that team? They get paid. They got professional players. And, you know, I'd take a win this week just as well as next week and the week before.